Hello, this is Monica Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin, and today I'm speaking to Sue Armstrong, a science writer, a broadcaster, and a foreign correspondent who's worked everywhere from Brussels to South Africa. She's been a consultant writer for the World Health Organization for more than 25 years and has written extensively on all areas of health and science. Her latest book is Borrowed Time: The Science of How and Why We Age. Sue, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
If we could start with a really basic question. What is ageing?
You say it's a really basic question. It's a very good question. But I mean, it's really difficult to know because there are lots of different definitions and they keep changing over the years. Very interesting, actually. Some people say, oh, it's dying from the inside out. Some people say it's genetically driven. Some people say it's just wear and tear. Some people actually even go far as to say aging is a disease. And I remember the first time I heard somebody say that, I rolled my eyes and thought, oh, goodness, it's like everything else, like childbirth and things like that. The scientists are coming in and medicalizing the whole thing. But in fact, I came round to seeing their point of view on that to quite an extent by the end of my interviewing and so on. But basically, it happens to all of us. But one of the great mysteries of aging is the fact that you look at a whole range of different species and they have so many different lifespans, including some creatures which seem to be almost immortal. Things like the little hydra that we used to find when in pond water and look at under the microscope in sort of early biology lessons and so on, seem to be almost immortal. So it's, to a great extent, it's a mystery. And there are still quite a number of different theories of what exactly it is.
So let's look at the impact that it has on the body and the diseases that it's ultimately responsible for.
Yes, well, I think going back to this whole question about what is ageing, this also comes down to the diseases thing. I think the definition that's most, or the explanation that's most widely accepted at the moment is one called the disposable soma theory, which basically translates into ordinary language as built-in obsolescence. And how it works is this, that it takes an awful lot of energy and resources to build and maintain a body such as ours. And in the end, nature doesn't care about us as individuals at all. Nature's whole purpose is to ensure the survival of the species, not us as individuals. And so most of the effort goes into ensuring that our germ cells, the sperm and the egg, are immortal and can get passed on from one generation to the next. And that our bodies, nature has invested in the sort of mechanisms for repair and maintenance to keep us going till we've grown up, been able to pass on our genes and bring up the next generation, nurture the next generation till it's on its feet. And then after that, nature hasn't got so much use for us and the repair mechanisms in our body, which, as I say, are extremely expensive in terms of resources and so on, resources which would have been very difficult to come by for our earliest ancestors. Those sort of run down, and it is the gradual loss of maintenance, inefficiency of maintenance and repair that seems to be at the root of ageing.
So now a lot of the research seems to be lumped in with pseudoscience, sort of snake oil, cosmetics and so on. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that's been a terrible problem for gerontology, the actual science of ageing, because it is lumped in and it's got terribly stigmatised by the snake oil salesman and so on. And I think very basically, since time immemorial, I mean, if you look back over centuries, people have always wanted to find the elixir of youth. And I think to a certain extent, it's that life is so rich and sweet that people can't bear the idea of dying. And also, as a species, we're fairly arrogant. We don't like to think that we are mortal. And I think it's been the search for immortality that has given the gerontology a bad name. And, you know, it's really very sad because aging research is massively important. Because as you were just asking a minute ago about the diseases of aging, and as I said earlier, there's some people actually call aging itself a disease. And this is because the diseases that we know, that we recognise very much as age-related, things like heart disease and dementia and cancers and diabetes and strokes and frailty, the single biggest risk factor for all of these diseases that we recognise very much as the diseases of old age is the aging process itself. It's literally the sort of wearing away of the body that gives rise to these diseases. And so you could say that the diseases of old age are in a way just the sort of points on a spectrum, the most obvious and severe points on a spectrum of what is a generally debilitating and pathological process, which is the ageing process.
So gerontologists really are trying to manage that. They're not trying actively to extend our lifespan, but just to make sure that we live as healthily as we can.
Well, I mean, not all of them. There are. I think the thing is, when you talk about the snake oil salesman, when I started this, I was interested in this whole idea of increasing the health span, which is what most gerontologists are all about. But of course, you still get the people who are really, really keen on extending life to 200 years, 500 years, 1,000 years. And they're the sort of immortalists and transhumanists and so on. So you still do have what I would say, and I'd be shot down for this, the wackier side of gerontology. And sadly, that's the side that sort of captures the imagination of the press when you suddenly hear that that people have been able to keep little worms in the lab and mice and so on alive sort of 10 times longer than they would normally live. These things catch on and people think that that's all that gerontology is about. But really what it's about is, as you say, trying to increase the health span to ensure that we live healthily and independently right up to the end. And this is very important because statistics at the moment show that a five-year-old in Britain today can expect to live to about the age of 80, but also that probably the likelihood is that the last 15 to 20 of those years of life will be really infirm and they'll be, you know, they're suffering from all kinds of things. And so, you know, they'll be really suffering ill health. And so what gerontologists are trying to do is literally to extend the health span so that you can go on to 80, 90, even 100, still independent, still with your marbles and so on. And that's the quest. And yes, that's what is very important about gerontology.
So are there any signs that we can modify the ageing process? I mean, are there any particularly exciting areas of research at the moment?
There's lots of exciting areas of research, but sadly, I mean, going back to this thing about the snake oil, the stigmatisation of this sort of wackier side of gerontology has meant that there's been terribly little money put into research. They have real difficulty getting funding for this area of research compared with all sorts of other things. The diseases of old age, the things like dementia and cancer and heart failure and so on, massive amount of money are put into those, which are the end game, but terribly little is actually used to fund the quest to get at the roots of these problems. But yes, there's some really, really interesting aspects of this. One of the things is, going back to this thing about genes, some time back, gerontologists discovered, working with worms and flies and mice and rats, all the things that are the sort of mainstay of lab research, they managed, tinkering around with certain genes, to make these little creatures to extend their lifespan by huge amounts. But also, crucially, they found that if they did extend their lifespan, they also found that these little creatures didn't get sick they maintained their health for a very long time. This was really important. But what that showed was not that tinkering around with our genes we're going to be able to do that. What it demonstrated was that the aging process is definitely modifiable. It's not just set in stone. And the area that one of the most dynamic areas is into what's called senescent cells. And some people call them zombie cells, which I think is a misnomer. And I'll explain why in a minute. But basically what senescent cells are, if you think about it, the way our bodies are built and maintained is by the division of cells. And every time a cell divides, it has to copy its DNA to make a sort of clone of itself. And over the generations of a cell, the risk of errors creeping into the copying process is very real. And if you get DNA which hasn't been copied faithfully, then it could be, you know, dangerous, it could cause cancer, it could even be fatal. And so nature has this very nifty mechanism whereby dividing cells have a finite number of divisions they're allowed to make. And this is called the Hayflick limit. And the Hayflick limit was discovered by a guy called Leonard Hayflick, who was a cell biologist. And he noticed that cells seemed to be going really strong, dividing as they should do, copying their DNA. And he realized that after a certain time, these cells in his lab dish would just suddenly stop. Now, the significant thing about these cells is they stop dividing and just creating more cells, but they don't die. They sit around, and they do have a few jobs to do, but after a while, if they sit around too long, they start to leak out substances which chew up the collagen, which is the stuff which holds our cells together. And as the collagen gets chewed up, this is what causes wrinkles, and this is what causes saggy bits in our bodies and so on, that are very much we all know about those of us who are aging. So they've been doing a lot of studying of senescent cells, because not only do they chew up the collagen, but they also send out things which cause inflammation, and a very low-grade inflammation, which is one of the driving forces of aging as well, because it just keeps your immune system constantly on its toes at a sort of, not the sort of level that we're all really aware of when you've got your immune system really fired up. It's just low-grade grumbling inflammation, which is one of the really big factors in aging. And senescent cells are a real driving force behind this.
So, finally, where are we then with translating what's been learnt in the lab into something that's applicable in the clinic, that's something that will really help us as individuals age well? I guess I'm begging you for the silver bullet.
Well, the thing about going back to senescent cells happen all the time. It's a bit of a misnomer, because it sounds as though they are synonymous with ageing. But in fact, we create senescent cells right from babyhood onwards. You know, they are part of the whole mechanism of our bodies growing and repairing themselves. And these senescent cells, first of all, they don't die, as I say. But after a while, the immune system comes along and clears them out. But what happens as we get older is the immune system gets a bit ropey, and it isn't able to clear the senescent cells out quite so effectively. And so these things build up, and that's when they cause trouble. Now, they found some amazing things, which I've actually seen in the lab. They found drugs which can reverse the decline of these cells so that they go from being senescent cells back into being cells that can divide and carry on their normal activities. So you can rejuvenate these cells, but you can also, they've also found ways of eliminating these cells. So get rid of them out of the body, and so they're not chewing up the collagen, and they're not causing inflammation, and they're not causing the problems of, you know, all the problems that we associate with aging.
So why aren't we all on that?
Well, the problem is this is proof of principle, but of course senescent cells are also, as I said earlier, they're supposed to be a mechanism of getting rid of cells before they're able to cause damage, like if their DNA gets messed up, which is likely to lead to cancer and so on. So they're an anti-cancer mechanism. And one of the problems is if you override this mechanism, which is our body's natural defence, and of course it does get overridden to quite an extent. A lot of people do get cancer, but for a very long time it does protect us from cancer. If you start overriding the body's system, then the big danger is that you could cause a lot of cancer. So they have to go very carefully with these things. So there's that, but there's quite a number of little things that people can do. Things like the age-old things we're told about, like good diet and exercise and so on, and they've dug down to the roots of those and found out sort of why those are so important. But the big issue about actually having a treatment for aging goes back to this whole thing about whether we categorise aging as a disease in its own right. Because, as I was saying earlier, all these big diseases of aging, the pharmaceutical industry is terribly busy working on anti-cancer drugs, anti-dementia drugs, things for our hearts, things for our blood pressure, all of the things that go wrong with aging. They put a lot of money into that, but they don't put a lot of money into the root causes of these things, because aging isn't seen as a disease. And so until we're able to categorise it and say, look, this is what we're trying to aim at, and we're not trying to aim at it so that we can all live to 1,000. We're trying to aim at the aging process itself so that we can get at the roots of some of these diseases. the pharmaceutical industry isn't particularly interested. And so it's been terribly, terribly hard for these really great things that are going on in the labs of gerontologists to be translated into anything that'll affect us that'll be in the doctor's clinic, because aging isn't seen as a condition that we should be treating. We wait until we get the diseases rather than, you know, treating the root causes. That's what it amounts to, really.
It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And you can read much more in Sue's book. It's called Borrowed Time, The Science of How and Why We Age. It's published by Bloomsbury. Sue Armstrong, thanks very much for talking to us. You've been listening to Monocle Reads, thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.